Hello and welcome to Booktopia You're On. I'm Bronwyn and I'm here with Tanea and Sarah, and we're sitting across from Amy Kaufman and Megan Spooner. Hi guys.
Hey.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
So they've come in today to talk to us about five specific books that they love. So we just launch straight into it, guys.
All right. So we haven't necessarily picked, I guess, the five best specfic books in the world. Although, you know, a few of them definitely, I think, would potentially make that list. But we've picked five that have kind of made us who we are as people and as writers instead. So the first one on the list is my favourite book of all time, The Dark is Rising by Susan Cooper. When I was in grade six, my librarian, Mrs. Amiot, who was amazing, told me that this was her desert island book. And the next week, I got my first ever book voucher for my 12th birthday. And so I took it down to my local bookshop and I bought The Dark is Rising sequence, which is all five books bound up in one. I still have it. It doesn't have a spine or a cover anymore. And when it's not well being read, it's held together with two plastic bands. But it is a story about an 11-year-old boy who discovers that there's a whole world other than our own and that he is a part of it. And it is without doubt the book that made me want to write. So it's my desert island book now too. I love it.
That's so sweet.
And the next one on the list is one of my all-time favorite books, which is The Last Unicorn by Peter Beagle. And people are often more familiar with the animated movie that they made of it, and I had in fact seen that first when I was very small and loved it. But when I read the book, it was good, and I liked it. And then a few years later, I read it again, and it was even better. And then a few years later, I read it again, and it was unbelievably amazing. And then a few years later, I read it again, and it was so good, I thought, you know, why am I even bothering? I will never be this good. I will never be able to write like this. And the thing is, there are so many layers in that book, and it's one of those books that changes over time. Like, when you read it as a child, it's a very different experience than when you read it as an adult. And it's just one of those books that really taught me the power of prose, of how important the actual craft, the actual words that you choose in your stories can be.
So it is a story for children predominantly? Because yes. For those of us who don't know what it is about.
Yeah. I haven't read the movie.
It's very good. I think you would really like it. This was written before there was YA as a, you know, as a thing. And so I think it would not be classified as young adult, partly because there's no teenage protagonist, but also it is maybe a little advanced, but to me it's the kind of advanced where if you're a child and you read it, you just read the part that is accessible to you, and you just ignore the stuff that isn't. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's one of those books that changes as you grow. It's really quite beautiful.
Oh, I'm going to have to read it.
I know, it's...
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
The prose will make you sob. It is amazing.
Yeah, and I think what it and The Dark is Rising both have in common is that they both do a lot with very simple, elegant prose. Mm-hmm. It's not flowery.
No.
So I've just been re-listening to The Dark is Rising sequence on audio, and I keep pausing and being like, five words, she just evoked an entire Welsh valley, you know, and I can see it. But I think the other thing they both have in common is that they both evoke a really strong sense of wonder. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that sense you have as a kid when you're reading something and you've just sort of got your mouth open the whole time.
You're just utterly transported.
Reading. Yeah.
You're not even you anymore. You are just the book that you were reading.
And I've just realized that was an almost flawless segue to book number three.
Yes. Absolutely. Which is a favorite of both of ours.
Love to claim that we planned, but we didn't. So the next one on our list is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne. Who was the namesake for Jules in our brand new book, Unearthed. Plug. But no, he was. I mean, my first experience with this one was when I was 11 years old, my father bought me a copy of it, and they gave it to me on Christmas Day. And they did not see me again until the 27th. And when I resurfaced, all the leftovers were gone and my world had changed. I remember so distinctly as I was reading it at the age of 11, thinking to myself, the whole world is changing.
You'll never be the same.
I will never be the same person again, because now I think I had loved fantasy up to that point, but I had never read a science fiction book. And it was the book I've made Meg tear up. I'm so proud. But
oh, come on, it's not that hard.
But I still adore fantasy today. I write fantasy, but my experience of reading a science fiction book at the age of 11 was in the way that I had desperately yearned to go into my fantasy stories, but knew in my heart that I wasn't going to go into them. This science fiction story, you could.
Yeah.
In a science fiction story, it it's happening happen. In your world, and, you know, if you were lucky enough, you could go into the book. And that's, I mean, even today, my thing I would grab after husband and dog, obviously, in a house fire, well, would be my teddy bear that I got the day I was born and my copy of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Like, that's what I would grab on the way out.
Yeah.
My TBR is growing.
I've
never read any Jules Verne. Jules Verne is one of those authors who, even though he's like a classic and they were written a long time ago, they're still super accessible today. Like, they're still very enjoyable to read. You know, I mean, it is a little dated in the prose and everything, but it's not like a struggle.
It's still, yeah, I mean, you know, we're talking Around the World in 80 Days. When you realize as well, Journey to the Center of the Earth, of course, yeah, Mysterious Island. And the thing that's amazing about reading Jules Verne is that you have to realize that almost all of what he's discussing, he's inventing.
Brand new. Nobody's been there before.
He's not writing. He was one of the forefathers of science fiction, and he was inventing all these devices that then wouldn't come along for decades or a century. And he was the first person to imagine that they could ever exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we read them today, it's so obvious to us that those things exist that we don't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't occur to us.
But
that
he
was first.
I love finding those. Like, I remember feeling that way when I was reading Wilkie Collins, and I'm like, so, right, that's where a lot of these things that are now cliche have come from.
Yeah.
Like, that's where they were born.
Like watching a Marx Brothers film and realizing a whole lot of that slapstick and comedy originated kind of on vaudeville, and then they were the ones who made it famous.
Yeah.
And now it's normal, but...
And just echoes through in references everywhere.
Yeah.
All right, I'm reading Jules Verne.
our fourth choice is certainly not one of the best books of all time, but it has had a huge impact on both of us, and that would be the Dragon Riders of Pern series by Anne McCaffrey. And
we picked Dragonflight for the sake of picking a book.
Yeah, it's the first one.
Yeah.
And this is significant for us in that it was such a strongly built world that it drove both of us to want to write fan fiction and want to sort of role play characters within this world. And I think many writers go through a period where their urge to write comes from very much from another place. They start writing fan fiction, or they start doing live action role play, or they start doing something that expresses their desire to be in the world of another author. And this was that book for both of us. And if it had not been for that book, we probably never would have met.
It's a very, very important book.
Yeah.
It is. And I think, I mean, that is why when we're in schools and we hear teachers talking down fan fiction or telling their kids to go write something original, we both get very frustrated with that. Politely frustrated, I hope. But mostly. But, I mean, the thing is, that's how we were drawn to write, and it's how they're being drawn to write, and it's so important.
And you can't force that journey to want to write original fiction, you know? I think a lot of teachers are like, stop writing fan fiction and write your own stuff, but the thing is, you have to get there on your own.
It's step by step,
You can't fast forward that journey.
I was a fan fiction girl in high school, too.
And look, it comes from the same place, I think, that tries to get kids to stop reading graphic novels or stop reading books that aren't somehow worthy.
Yeah.
When, of course, the answer is, if the kid wants to read a particular book, shut up and give him the book. Get out of the way, you know, don't mess with it. And I mean, Dragonflight is not a book that we would necessarily even recommend today, to be completely honest.
And it's very problematic in a lot of ways. I mean, it's symptomatic of the time in which it was written. There are some gender problems and some...
It's so interesting to hear you said. I loved Anne McCaffrey, but I was more of the... I liked her psychic ones. So like
the ship
the tower and the hive.
I liked those ones. And I also... The Crystal Singers.
But
now I'm scared.
I recommend not rereading them unless you really feel like you really want to, because it can be disappointing, but...
And the thing is, I mean, she herself was incredibly accomplished.
Oh,
and very progressive in a lot of ways. But just in some, you know, some of her gender stuff and some of her sexuality stuff, not so much. And again, she was in a lot of ways ahead of the curve for her time.
In so many ways, yeah.
We are just now further ahead from there. And you saw the change happen in her work over the years as she continually evolved ahead of the curve. But yeah, these days you look back and you're like, oh, well, that's probably not the way that we would write that today. And that's okay.
It's okay.
Because that's it was fine. Written. Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, one of the reasons that we all remember her book so passionately and feel so passionate about her books is she created these worlds that you are desperate to go into. And that hasn't changed.
I mean, that was our Harry Potter back in the day. I mean, so many kids started writing fan fiction because they became so pulled into the world, the wizarding world of Harry Potter, and rightly so. Yeah. And that it's just, you know, that was the book for us,
yeah,
Dragonflight,
absolutely.
That did that.
And book number five is one that we both share as a huge influence, which is Sabriel by Garth Nix.
Yes.
So,
my favorite.
I mean, we've both read it a pile of times, and I think, to be honest, if you were to line up, you know, 10 published YA authors today and ask them who their influences were, I reckon eight would step forward and say Garth Nix.
Garth Nix would be in there,
And then poor Garth Nix, who's a lovely man, would just be mortified. Yes. So embarrassed by the attention. But, I mean, you know, prose, sense of wonder, worlds you want to dive into.
And such a unique magic system.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so new and different and so unlike anything I had ever read. And so much of fantasy is based on tropes and archetypes and things you've already seen before. And it feels... And it can be comforting, you know, it can be, you know, reading a very trope-heavy fantasy can be comforting because it feels familiar, but it's not necessarily going to be transformative or fresh or new, and that, for me, was what Sabriel was. It was just this beautiful fantasy that felt classic and rich and yet was so different from anything else I had ever read.
Yeah, like, I think he demonstrated to a lot of writers of our age that if you wrote a quite complicated and completely different thing that didn't rely on sort of, you know,
sword
princess,
sorcery,
castle, dragon, sword, that people not only would be able to understand it, but would flock to it and would make the commitment that was required to understand your world. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think we hadn't seen a lot of stuff like that before.
Yeah.
I remember once one of my share houses, we were all moving house, so we're all packing together, and I was listening to Sabriel on audiobook. And one of my housemates, who was not a big reader, was kind of catching, I think, you know, bits of it from his room. And so then he came in and said, oh, can I have the first CD of that?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's read by Tim Curry, who's just mesmerizing. And we ended up in this situation where four people are all packing boxes and listening to the CDs in a chain. And if you dared slow down, people would be banging on your bedroom door, being like, hurry up, listen to the next
CD.
If you're not listening, I'm taking it.
That's great.
And it was kind of, it was just the most, I was sitting there being like, I don't even know how I started this.
It's the most wonderful feeling in the world when you share a book that transformed you and you see it transforming other people. Like, there is nothing... Okay, the only thing better than that is writing a book that you then see people flocking to. But, like, I mean, being able to recommend books to people and have them really embrace them is a pretty amazing feeling.
Yeah.
And just to finish off, so you guys are here today to talk to us about Unearthed, your new book as well. And so just for this podcast, could you just give us, tell everyone what your book is about?
Yeah.
Well, the quick way to explain it is that it's essentially like Indiana Jones meets Lara Croft in space.
Yeah,
that's all you need,
right? It's
but
alien planets and tomb raiding and a very mismatched couple of people who have to work together to save, at a minimum, themselves and then potentially the universe.
Yeah,
so no pressure, basically.
Yeah,
no pressure. They're going to be fine. Don't worry.
Laid back read, really.
Absolutely, perfect for the holiday.
Yeah,
no high stakes there.
No
at all.
Adventure, no pitfalls, no traps, no puzzle solving.
No, I
none
mean,
of
it's
that.
Kind of it's our love letter to Temple of Doom and Raiders.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah.
And a lot of fun to read on our behalf.
Oh, thank you.
We really hope everyone gets into it from Christmas and beyond into ever and ever, and I'm just going to keep telling people about it. So
there you go. That's six books.
Yes, exactly. So thank you for bringing your list in, guys, and for chatting to us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Okay, so thanks for joining us, everybody, and don't forget to tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.